Session number 1726, Mr. Thomas Lawton, reel 18.
Mr. Lawton, reel 18. You said the Americans were, for a while, your protective power. Did any of their representatives come to the camps?
Yes. One day, I was standing raggy, untidy, lousy, dirty, and there was a beautiful lady and a very well-dressed gentleman approached me with a German officer. And the German officer said, Vertrauensmann. I said, what? You are a Vertrauensmann. Well, I said, that's what I reckon. Man of confidence. So he says, this gentleman has come to see you. I said, no. Gray suit on, big tie, big hat. I said, hello, come to see me. Yeah. He said, I'm from the protective power, you know, America is your protecting power, and I'm from the embassy in Berlin. Mm-hmm. And this is my assistant, Miss So-and-so. How do you know? I said, oh, don't shake hands. What? Don't shake hands. I said, I'm lonely. I said, I'll pass them on to you. He said, what? And that was when he got on about what facilities did we have for entertainment, what laundry did we have, what kind of a playing field, etc. And I said to him, you come from Berlin? Yeah. I said, you come from the Never Never Land? I says, we haven't any laundry. We haven't any washing facilities. We have nothing. And Plainfield's no such thing operating. I says, look around you. I says, it's a beautiful building, but there's nothing outside. No, then I said, I have heard that when it was a ladies' academy, there are shower baths upstairs. We've never seen them. Oh. I said, before you start, this man here speaks English. Yeah. And I said, everything I say, he will notice. I think he had a broke with him. Yeah. So I says, to get the truth, it would be better if you'd come to me without him. Or we can tell him to hop it now. And John looked at him. Oh, he says, oh, just carry on. She had a great big pad. And when he asked me questions about this, that, the other, and I said, hey, don't exist, never see them, never see them. She just made a big scream. And eventually he came to Red Cross parcels. I thought actually I'd dealt with it, but nevertheless. He says, now then, what about the Red Cross parcels? What do you think of the contracts of the Red Cross parcels? I says, never having seen one, I can't tell you what's in them. What? I said, never seen one. I said, we have had bulk Red Cross. But I said, we've never had a Red Cross parcel.
That's as an individual?
As an individual. I said, you might get one among four, but I said, when you get them, the Germans puncture every tin so that you can't accumulate anything for escaping purposes. And I said, remember, he's taking everything down Lambstein. Oh. He says, well, there are Red Cross parcels which are going to be issued tomorrow. I says, where? In the Commandant Tour. I said, that's news. So I said to this fella, they're going to issue these parcels tomorrow. That's what he says. I says, what he means is they're going to transfer them from where they've got them to here. They're not issued. I says, we'll be looking if we get them. Oh, and so, eventually, this woman said, gee, There's a lot of flies round here. There ain't any in Berlin. I couldn't help but see it. I says, no, they'll have been there. Shit off, shit, and come here. And anyhow, the result was that it wasn't a satisfactory dose. They didn't do any good. Outside the fact that his shepherd said, oh, there are red cross parcels which we are going to issue. Good. When they went away, that was it. That's the last time I ever saw them, because they came into war after that. And the Swiss people became Swiss and Sweden. Switzerland and Sweden.
Did things improve then with the Swiss and the Swedes?
Eh?
Did the Swiss and the Swedes make anything better?
No. I'll tell you something. As a matter of fact, I was practically arguing with the commandant. They were there. And I had Sergeant Major Riggs, 1st Battalion, Dunray Infantry. He had a company of men, and I had the camp. And the commandant was saying, oh, verboten. George Riggs says, alles ist verboten. And keep your company. And he tore his book up and didn't throw it at the commandant. You can run the company. I'm finished. And the Swedes, they're looking at him. And I was out of Manal, you see. And the Swiss representative said to me, Sergeant Major, be careful what you say. What? Be careful what you say. They were useless. Anyhow, the result of this was that those parcels did get moved from the Commandantur across to our storehouse. And I had the keys of the whole place. And they were told, no, we'll come tomorrow and issue the parcels. Now, when they came to issue the parcels, they came with everything but a bazooka from the puncture tins. Even if there were cigarettes in there, they tore them open to look for secret messages on the paper. And in so much that they couldn't get any cigarette paper, you got the baggy where you smoked the newspapers. But anyhow, they brought them across and put them in there. One per man. Well, they had the numbers. One per man. Issued tomorrow. And the way it went, see? With the result, they were locked in the place in Cherbourg. It was a lovely building. They were locked in there, but there were all the trawler guards knocking around, see? So that night, I looked in and I saw the Red Cross parcels, and I said, good. They will not be there tomorrow to be issued. They're going to be issued tonight. I sent word round each room to tell the room leader to come with two men and a blanket to take their Red Cross parcels away. Period in the passage. He did it properly. Sergeant Jack Tingle, my policeman, he was, right, number room, right, there you are. 10, 15 or 20, according to the number. Get the meat. Yeah? Get the meat. The finish, empty. Place was empty. I says, the boys will have a good night tonight. Jack says, aye, but he said, what about tomorrow? When the guards come. I said, we'll deal with that when it comes. Next morning, they arrived with all kinds of crowbars and pinch bars and all kinds of gear. They came in. We have come to issue the parcels. I said, the parcels have been issued. What? The parcels have been issued. Saved you the trouble. What? No parcels? No, I said, been issued. Last night, I said to them last night. We must have them back. I says, they'll be eaten by now. The parcels are not left. We must have the boxes. No, I says, they'll be burnt up to heat the water, which they were. Oh, he went mad. Eh? Yeah, nothing you can do with it. Oh, but he's always over with me. But the result was, I was taken down into Schildburg. I'd had to go to see the big man. Hauptmann's Vince, I think it was. Actually, the hopman fence covered the whole district. So he would have Posen and Shelburg and various places, see? And when I went in, I was marching in front of this fella. I mean, I was back in condition because they gave us that funny. Made us smart to go down there. Eh? They had battle dresses, they had everything there, and we were in rags. Anyhow, I was supposed to march in the gutter, and my guard or post marched on the footpath. Eh? And I said, well, I know these people coming across the bridges, and what do they speak? They'll be saying, look at that Jerry. Look at that smart English fellow. Yeah. With the result, we got there, and when we went in, it happened to be more or less the same place as we had to go when the census said about the learning how to check the letters. And here was where I was taken in front of the commandant, and he gave me a good dressing down in German. And then I turned around and I said, does anybody speak English? Does anybody speak English? Because I don't know any German. Right? And I think the commander would have laughed if he dared to think of bloody carry on he'd done, and me, I didn't know he's talking about. Anyway, once again, I felt the feeling of the German people in there, the staff. And I don't know if I told you about this. One gave me an envelope with 3 cigarettes in. Right. That was the same place. Right? However, all that happened was that when I went back, I was told I must never do that again. And that was more or less the story of the German representatives and the Swiss. The German, the American representatives, he did take notes on that kind of thing, but that was it. It was a waste of time. And I can't think there on any occasion when they did any good whatsoever. When that marshal was shot, we got his clothes, and we did pass them on to the representatives that came, but we never know what happened to them. The Germans were so slow, they never thought about getting the uniform with a bullet hole in it, and we did, and we kept it. And we handed it across to the representatives when they came, but I don't know what ever happened to it. We never heard out about it, and I never heard a thing about that until after the war, when I got a letter from the War Crimes Commission. Could I tell them the name of the man that shot Marshall? No. I didn't even know what regiment he belonged to. And that was that finished there, as far as Marshall was concerned. And I somewhere have a photograph of Marshall in the group.
Were there any other tragedies, men dying for...
Oh, yeah, well, you know, there used to be a tripwire. They called it a tripwire that was wired about 2 foot high. Just a single wire. And you were not allowed to step over that wire. It was too near the perimeter wires. Now, the notice that was up was Achtung, to the words that if you step over that wire, you will be shot. Not shot at. You will be shot. Well, one man was shot. And he just went across to get a football. And that nearly caused a riot in the camp. But you see, then they blame the man up there. We try to point out, it says you'll be shot. It should be, you'll be warned. Now, that was a warning. And the result was that you had to be very careful with them. I've told other people, I've never seen anybody ill-used in the camps. I was, but I've never seen anybody getting bashed or anything like it, other than in the first place, when we went into that horrible place, Shubin, where we made this knees bend, deep knees bend, and a bloke went round the back with a kid. And any old bloke that couldn't do it, give a lash. That was all. I have heard of other people that have seen all kinds of rough treatment, but I never did.
What date would this be?
Eh?
What date are we talking about? What period of time? What year was it?
Oh, 42. See, at the end of 42. One little interesting thing here. It was a beautiful building. White staircases, big balustrades, and one day I was standing looking out of a window into the distance in Poland, and there's a German guard come up beside me and he says, where would you go if you got out? I said, well, where would you go if you got out? In other words, why waste the time? There's nowhere to go, which was true. Because on three occasions I was out, it wasn't a case of escaping, it was a case of getting out. And on three occasions we were brought back within a couple of shakes. It was a waste of time. Individually, very tough. Different when we got in the big camps. However, at Shellburg on this occasion, we had, as I've said before, the secret radio. And we should dismantle it and cut it in parts, see? But we also kept it in a Red Cross box. And I'd been up on the top of the building, on the top floor of the building, with it. And I had it under my arm. And when I was coming down the stairs, I saw a German officer coming up, high ranker, a stranger to me. And I said, ooh. I mean, you salute. I'll salute him. And I know what he's going to say, what have you got in that box? So I jumped on the banisters. It slid down the banisters, the box in the mouth, and I shouted, whoopee. And when we came to this landing, there was two or three landings, the German officer just got there, I jumped off, and I saluted him. And I have an idea, he would say, what a shame. You know, fine-looking fella like that, he's gone crackers. So before he could say to me, what have you got in that box? I said, What happens here? What have I got here? Radio. Telefunken. How do you like? What? I said, Dishbracken. You can't understand the Germans. Smart fella, not a young fella, a man. And when I did that to him, put me both on my lips like that, I says, nicht sprechen. He says, nein, ich nicht sprechen. I thanked him, and I jumped on the banister and went away again, and I had the secret radio under my arm. That was just an incident there. It was a nice place, but we had no facilities whatsoever, and that was the first time that we really found a Red Cross parcel per man. And I didn't get punished for it. I was just severely told off.
And you went to Schellenberg after Posen. This is the...
Yes.
After the first Posen.
You see, we were in Posen twice. But from Schellenberg, we went to a place called Krottischen.
What was it like?
Terrible. It wasn't a camp. It was a warehouse. Now, in Schellenberg, they decided there must have been about 1,400 men, decided that they would break the camp up and everybody was going out on work parties of 100. That meant you were going to camp somewhere. The men said they would go quietly if they got the parcels to carry with them. No chance. But the commandant said he would give a written instruction to each party to hand in to their new boss that they had to have the parcels. The parcels would travel on the train with them. Well, the men weren't too agreeing about that. And they were getting a bit rowdy. And I was standing on the veranda with this commandant, and he wasn't a bad man. And I said to the lads, I shouted, by the way, it's a hell of a long time since any of you did any parades. So I said, I'm going to form you up, the whole camp, and I'm going to give the word of command, forward march, and I want the whole camp to come forward at least 20 paces. And I want it done as if you're on the parade ground. What? I says, for your benefit, for my benefit, and for the commandant's benefit, because as far as he's concerned, they're running rag and tag. And you know, it was just as though they had to. There was guardsmen among them. And they formed up in their companies, their respective companies, the whole parade. And I give the order, 20 paces forward, march. And they stepped off like that. And they came the 20 paces, halted, and stood there. And I said, stand out, ace. The commandant looked. He says, thank you. I knew what he was thinking then. He said, we're not dealing with rags and tags. We're dealing with soldiers. That's a different thing. Anyhow, we all were allocated to various camps. We didn't know which. We got in the trucks, and every now and then they took 100 off and 100 off and 100 off. And I finished in a place called Crottishan. And when we arrived in Crottishan Station, about 2 o'clock in the morning, what a horrible place. It looked dead. And no sooner had we arrived than the whole place lit up with lights. We were bundled off the train, formed into our 100, and marched into the streets of Crottishan, 2 o'clock in the morning, dead. There was a light, there was a bit of smoke from a chimney, and I can imagine that the Poles were crouching in the doorway, and trying to keep warm, huddled up, waiting for the kick on the door to rouse them out, because they treated the Poles very badly. Right, so we were more or less shuffled through the streets of Crottishan, obviously under pressure of that little town from the Germans. There was no signs of a light, there was no smoke from any chimneys. We visualised the situation the Poles would be in, sitting in their family house, crushed together to try and keep warm. And eventually we arrived at a big building, never thinking that this would be the lager. But it was. And we were just ushered into this building. It was a big warehouse, actually, steel and concrete. And they slid the doors open, and they just ushered us all in, and then the doors went with a clash, and we were inside, in the dark, until we got our eyesight. When we got our eyesight, there was like a platform covered with straw. That's where the French had been sleeping, on that straw. And wherever you followed the French, you got lice. So we said, that's the sleeping facilities. Well, we're tired enough to sleep on it. Where's the ablutions, if any? Down there was like a bench with a pipe along, cold water type thing. Nothing else. No heat, no heat. So we couldn't do anything about it, we just had to stick it, and that next morning the door swung open, and in came 2 or 3 guards with the commandant. And the commandant was an unteroffizier, but he had the duty sword on, which rose him to the dizzy height of commandant. And although he wasn't a very big man, he felt very proud of himself. And the guards, of course, said, Rouse, aufstehen, get out of bed, get up. Get out of bed, off this lousy straw. So I went forward and I said to him, do you speak English? Or something like that? No. All he was interested in was Arbeit, work parties. They were going to take work parties out. I said, but no, hold on. I said, we haven't had anything yet. We haven't had any coffee, not anything. So we did get a litre of coffee. And then I had to get out, had to take a party out. He was responsible again. I went out, and I said to him next day, when he came, we haven't anything to eat from, we haven't anything to drink from, we haven't any soap, we haven't anything to dry with, so I want lawful. A snapper, that was a bowl, handtusche, towels, zeifa, messer, on decken, blankets, kommt morgen. Right. Next morning, same thing, kommt morgen. Now the lads were going out to these work parties, the one being hardly hard work, but they won't get their soup till night when they came in. This went on for 8 days. And I told the men one morning, I says, now you're not going out to work, any of you, until we get that, and that. Right? And I turned round and I said, is there anybody here who speaks German? And one lad put his hand up. He said, I know some of you. I said, come here. Now I says, I made one big mistake. I didn't ask him where he had learned his German. I said, no, then I want you to be my interpreter, or dolmetscher, as they say. Whatever I say, you just repeat it. Remember, you are neutral. Whatever he says, you repeat it. He will know my attitude by the way I sound off, and I'll know his attitude.
I think we've got this bit. Yeah.
And so he came in, and I told him they are not going out to work that morning until they get something to eat and we get all that. And he said, yeah, come, Morgan. And I took the slide forward and I said, don't tell him, I don't believe him. And he went wild. He started frothing the mouth, he started pulling out the biggest luger possible. And I called him by the halsband, that's a band that went around the neck. And I says, pull that out and I'll smash your bloody face. And he didn't know what to do. The guards didn't know what to do, they all went out. And everybody said, oh, trouble. Jack Tinker said to me, Tommy, and Joe Roberts, Sergeant Joe Roberts, the Queen Victoria Rifles, ooh. But everything was quiet, there was no trouble. Until next morning, about 2 o'clock, a favourite time with the Germans, when their system was low, about 2 o'clock, rouse, you know, up. And I was taken in front of the real commandant and another high-ranking officer, and there was a woman in the room. Have I looked at her? Can't remember it?
I think we may have got it.
Yeah.
Just go through it very briefly.
Yes. But the result was, I was given a good telling off. I only had a blanket around me, this woman in the room, the two guards, this commandant, this high-ranking officer, and the woman. And I was going to Straflager, and I knew what that meant, punishment camp. And I said, when? He says, yet, now. And the result was, within half an hour, I was bundled away. But Sergeant Tingle and Sergeant Roberts said, if you're going, we are going. And I said, no, you stop back with the lads. No, they said, you're only in trouble because of us. We are going with you. And that's when we went to a place called Graz.
We've got Graz.
6,000 Frenchmen in it and about 3 Englishmen. Right. I'm not too sure how it happened. I know it was 1943, but there was a party of us, 20, sent to a place called Stalag 383, which was a Nixarbeiterkamp, non-workers camp. And of course the Germans thought that Hitler was the man that said above corporal you don't need work. It wasn't, it was Geneva Conventions. But it's easier for them to say you don't need work, they're not there under the armed guard who says you will walk. Anyhow, there were 20 of us on a truck. Any amount of room. We had 3 Red Cross parcels each. We had I think he was a Feldwebel, I think he was a sergeant in charge, and 2 guards, just 2 young men. And we sat on that truck, and we had the nicest journey from Poland down into Bavaria, through lovely country. Took about maybe a couple of days. We had 3 Red Cross parcels. The 2 guards were just young lads who had been at the siege of Leningrad. They were not at Stalingrad, but they were at the siege of Leningrad. And it was those 2, one of those had been wounded twice. And it was those lads who told us about the Russian tactics, where you didn't know they were there. He said, you see, we were so cold we could hardly hold the rifles. That's when they give them the 4 coats from the women and that. And he said, when you look out, he says, all snow, covered with snow. And when he says, they say the Russians are dumb. Every Russian, he said, must have had a synchronized watch. And we couldn't see them because they were under the snow. The Russian tactics was to dig a grabber or a hole. And they got in it and put their great coats over them. And they got covered with snow. And they had watches which were synchronized. And at a certain time, each individual rose up. So the snow hoisted up, and hundreds of Russians came at it with the fixed bayonets and machine guns. He says it was terrifying.